Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. There it is.
Hello.
All right, folks. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Hey, your name is Tony Pennycow.
I'm coming at you with another Fight News Unlimited Combat sports show. There's plenty to talk about. That's UFC 187 coming up this weekend. We got our boy, former guest of ours just a few weeks ago, Ryan Kielczewski, fighting this weekend in a boxing card in Boston, which I won't be able to be at, unfortunately. They wouldn't even give me press credentials when I tried to go. Kind of pissed about that, but what can you do? We'll figure it out next time. Anyway, other stuff in the news. We've got Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather talking again. Pacquiao is actually, I've heard, talking about retiring after this shoulder surgery. And Mayweather is sticking to his guns that his next fight's going to be his last fight. So, a rematch, sounds like.
You know what, I was reading this the other day myself. It's like, you know, it's likely going to be a rematch, but here's the problem. It's going to be a hard sell this time. Last time, easy sell. This
right.
time, it's going to be a hard sell.
And,
you know what would be actually funny? You know, the fight that was the easy sell, the one that everybody was waiting on, and it turned out to be a disappointment, you'd watch him have, like, a rematch, and it turned into, like, Gotti Ward. You know, and a fraction of people see this one. They think, oh my God, this is one of the best fights ever. And then they go for a third fight. Everybody goes to get the third one because the second one was so great and the third one sucked. Yeah, the third one's like worse than the first.
Yeah, and if it's not bad enough for Manny, 32 lawsuits across the United States have been filed, most of them naming him as a defendant.
Because of a lack of effort because of his shoulder?
Basically, yeah. That's
wow.
been one piece of evidence in every piece, part of the lawsuit. Every lawsuit is that document that he said where he said no on the question of whether he had a shoulder injury. So, there you go. One bar, actually, Flight's Beer Bar near Los Angeles, said Pacquiao and his promoter's actions were, quote, nothing but a cash grab, unquote. They paid $2,600 to broadcast the fight that aired from the MGM Grand. And all these claims could actually be merged into one case if the judge agrees on it. But, yeah, every single lawsuit is referenced that Nevada Athletic Commission medical questionnaire that Pacquiao signed and apparently committed perjury on. And it could be in excess of $5 million each for all these claims. Unbelievable.
You know what that kind of reminds me of? You say it could be like, you say it could be $5 million each or $5 million total?
$5 million each.
Okay, and that's kind of a big deal then, you know. I just remember 30 years ago when Tyson was going for his first title against Trevor Burbick. Now, obviously the purses then weren't as astronomical as they were now, but Mike was making a pretty good chunk of change for that fight. And the WBC, which was the belt he was going for, they had a rule that you could not wear the exact same color outfit that the champion was wearing. So, you know, to say, you know, it's Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was mostly known for wearing white trunks with it and you had a black trim. Ali was defending the title, so he said, okay, when he was, black, whoever he was fighting, Joe Frazier or whoever, could not wear those colors. So Tyson's getting ready to fight Trevor Burbick. Burbick's like, I'm going to mess with him psychologically. Tyson at the time was known for the all-black and the black socks, the no socks, the black shoes. So Burbick's like, I'm wearing all black. So the WBC's like, well, Mike, you can't wear all black. If you do, you get a $5,000 fine. $5,000 when you're paying the guy a couple million for the fight. $5,000
fine and beat
the shit out of
Burke. Well, I don't know. Anyway. Still waiting on Psychic Tom. There he is. Psychic Tom. Connected. Hello. Almost. There we go. Get him off mute. He's off mute. There he is.
All right. Good evening, gentlemen. Lots of good stuff. Hey.
Now we can make predictions. And, Tom, again, you're going to have to tell me what went on at the UFC event because I went through it, I guess, again. Yeah.
Well, I won't say it was much of a barn burner. The main event was kind of unfolded the way I thought. I didn't think Uriah would be stopped, but I just didn't think his toolbox was big enough. And Frankie pitched a shutout, and it was a lot of movement, a lot of activity, but not much damage. Kind of one of those one-to-nothing pitcher's duels. And
kind of surprised me that Frankie would go and call out Dana White for a title shot after.
More power to him. He's got to talk up his position for sure. And I guess one of the highlights was Mark Munoz. He really put on a performance against our former guest, Luke. And Munoz really, that was kind of the highlight of the night, I would say. He really... really gave it a good shot, so good for him. He's going into retirement, and hopefully he's going to be enjoying himself. So, yeah, definitely wasn't the most memorable action-packed card we've seen.
Well, it is what it is, as they say. And Mark Munoz got a lot of press for that too. You know, beforehand they were making a big deal out of the fact that here he is fighting at home in the Philippines. And it's the last fight of his career. He's decided to retire after getting his ass kicked in his last fight. So you think all the odds are against him, you know, fighting a guy like Luke Barnett, who's almost undefeated. He's had a couple bad fights, and wasn't enough to stop that guy. He just was right in front of the hometown people and gave it his all. And now he can hang him up proud, kind of like Chris Lytle. All done. On a good note. And some news with John Jones is kind of concerning here. Number one, he's back in training, according to his buddy Carlos Condit, already back at the gym. And he said, quote, "I'll be back," to Condit, Jones did. So, pretty interesting. Anderson Silva actually said he wants to see Jones step away from the sport for a while, so he needs to focus. Says, "I love Jones, but he needs to change everything in life." Of course, he's facing a felony charge after that hit-and-run incident in New Mexico back in April. And crashed into two vehicles after running a red light, according to the off-duty police officer that tried to get him before he ran away. And, of course, he also grabbed a handful of cash, you know, because when you're on the run, you got to have some cash. He didn't grab the marijuana because they still found that in there. Posted bail the next day, $2,500, and they don't know whether they're going to bring it to a trial or a grand jury at this point. But his fight with Rumble Johnson, of course, is off. It's supposed to be Saturday. Now it's going to be Jones versus Rumble. Cormier versus Rumble. We'll talk about that a little later, but... pretty interesting stuff. So he's out of the picture. But Dana White has actually come out and said that as soon as he comes back, he gets the title shot. Now, what do you think about that? I think that's pretty fucked up.
Well, I can see both sides, because really he didn't lose it in the cage. So I can play devil's advocate with you on that one and say that this is supposed to be for the belt, what's happening Saturday, but it kind of has that interim belt, you know, because until you really beat the champ, you know, are you the real guy? So
yeah.
I mean, that's one way to look at it, and it would be a big money fight also, so.
Well, White says he's got a civil suit against him and all this other stuff. We'll see how he gets through this and then find out where his head is. How does he handle himself through the situation and after it? I mean, I got to see from him that he's doing the right thing. Oh, shit. Now you got to see from him? You didn't have to do that before all this shit happened? Oh, whatever. Okay, so provided Jones can get his shit together, he's picking up exactly where he left off whenever he comes back, so not too shabby. He gets through all this stuff, but I hope he saved a couple million here and there, because you might need that just for the lawyers. Civil and criminal here, I guess. So anyway. Another Jones is in the news, for better reasons. Another former guest of ours. And it's Roy Jones Jr. Guess who he wants to fight?
Well, let me guess.
On the 4th of July.
I hope you're not going to say Sergey Kovalev.
No.
Thank God.
Nope, Cruiserweight.
Cruiserweight, okay. I don't even know any of the Cruiserweights right now, as much as that is.
I didn't even know there was a cruiserweight division still. That's true. It doesn't get a lot of PR. Anyway, Roy Jones Jr. wants to fight Marco Huck on the 4th of July in Phoenix, Arizona. Marco Huck. 46 years old, Jones, from Pensco, Florida. He's a former 10-time world champion in middleweight, super middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight divisions. And he says he's got nothing to prove in the sport, but he does obviously seem to want a title here, because Huck currently holds the World Boxing Organization World Cruiserweight title. And he won on August 29, 2009, so he's had it for a while. Huck is from Serbia, resides in Berlin, and has defended his crown 13 times. So I don't know if those were all bums or haven't faced anybody of Jones' stature. I don't know. We might see. He can still do it. But we know Jones has been fighting virtually bums lately. You know, a lot of guys that are glorified training partners. So, you know, more power to him that he can still do it. But he's been picking his own guys and fighting on his own cards. So this is a real big step up for him. I hope he's, you know, knows what he's doing. He does take this fight, but it's just kind of in the rumor stages now. Or talk stages, I should say, because it does seem like they are talking. And of course, Jones does have a hell of a record, 61-8-0 with 44 knockouts. Been an analyst, too, and he's coming off a fight against Paul Vasquez via first round TKO last March. Huck is 38-2-1 with 26 knockouts, lost just one fight in this division. His other loss came in a heavyweight bout against Alexander Povetkin in 2012. He hasn't lost since then. And he won a 12-round decision in his last fight against Mirko Larghetti, August 8th, 2014. That's it. So, Roy Jones Jr., taking a big step up. Interested to see how he does there. What else we got? We got another death in the sport of mixed martial arts, but it wasn't in the cage or in training. It's just,
wow.
Guy checked himself out of the hospital. Not too smuck and fart here. I hate to make fun of the dead here, but veteran Corey Hill, this 36 years old veteran UFC fighter, died in Tampa, Florida after suffering a cardiac arrest as a result of a collapsed lung. So he went to the hospitals with a severe case of bronchitis, first of all. X-ray that they took revealed a cyst in his lung, and the doctors ordered surgery. After surgery, they refused a ventilator and signed a waiver of liability. And this is according to a source close to the fighter who asked to remain anonymous. Hill then suffered a collapsed lung and a heart attack and was close to death for several days. And then his wife actually denied that he was dead for like 3 days. It was kind of odd. It was a crazy story going on in mixed martial arts. Nobody knew if this guy was dead or alive. And then all of a sudden, finally she confirmed, yes, he is dead. I don't know. I don't know why they would do that unless it really had something to do with, you know, how they were trying to hide that it was his fault. He checked himself out. Checked himself out in more ways than one, I guess. Jeez. Yikes. Good news if you're a guy like me who likes hardcore rules against performance-enhancing drugs. Nevada State Athletic Commission, or the Nevada Athletic Commission, as they call themselves now, they've discussed and now acted upon an increased and standardized protocol for punishing drug users in combat sports. So, new guidelines are as follows. We have five different tiers of punishment. And the first one is for sedatives, muscle relaxants, sleep aids. I don't even know how to say this one. Anxiolytics, I guess, for anxiety. Opiates and cannabis, all these tier one drugs. First offense, you get an 18-month suspension. 30% of your purse, gone. Second offense, 24-month suspension. 40 to 50% of your purse, gone. Third offense. 36-month suspension now, a fine of 60 to 75% of the purse. Fourth offense, a lifetime suspension, and 100% of your purse gone. Okay. Then, tier two, higher than marijuana and all that other stuff, diuretics. You cannot use diuretics to cut weight. These rules say you're going to have some trouble. First offense, 2 years out of business. 2 year suspension, 24 months. And on top of that, you get a 30 to 40% fine off your purse there. Second offense, 36 months, 40 to 60% purse fine. Third offense, lifetime suspension, 100% of your purse. That's it for diuretics. Then we go to tier three, stimulants, amphetamines, and cocaine, etc. First offense, 24 months. Fine of 35 to 45%. Second offense, 36 months, 50 to 60%. Third offense, lifetime suspension, 100% fine. Now we go to the big one, anabolic steroids, testosterone, HGH, all that fun stuff. First, 50 to 75% of the purse. Second offense, 48 months, fine of 75 to 100% of purse, and third offense now is a lifetime suspension and no purse for you. Tier five, avoiding testing, detection, / urine sample, not of human origin or not of tested athletes. Adulterants, drugs, including diuretics, such as masking agents. So basically, hiding from a test or trying to use products that hide other stuff that could be tested for. For this one, you only get two chances. One chance, because the first offense is a 48-month suspension and 75% purse fine. Second offense, that's it. Lifetime suspension, 100% of your purse. So, finalized guidelines are a lot more severe than the initial guidelines handed out by the commission. I guess the effective date for when they're going to go into effect, it's supposed to be September 1st, so the possibility of extending that to my birthday of October 1st is discussed, because, you know, it's my birthday, so I don't want to do this for me. I've been such a bitch about it. No, But most controversial of these changes is actually doubling down on punishment for Tier 1 recreational drug use, most particularly marijuana, of course. You know, legislation with marijuana legalization is going across the United States. So, you know, a lot of the states that actually allow marijuana for medical purposes, too, could get involved and lobby to change some of this stuff. Because a lot of fighters actually do resort to marijuana for whatever reason. Some might say painkillers, you know, and it probably is safer than the pharmaceutical painkiller you get addicted to pretty quickly and spend your life savings on. But, you know, as it gets more legal and the rules change with medical marijuana and just recreational use, I think you might see some of that stuff get relaxed. And they ought to have some kind of exemption for somebody who can really prove that they need it medically. But it's a whole different ballpark than TRT. So now they've officially put it in that ballpark. And bad news for the UFC again. Federal government is sniffing around. I want to know what's going on. The FTC... I said this before when they had their initial investigation of the UFC and they decided to put out a press release saying that they are not taking any action. A lot of people said, well, that means they closed their investigation. No, that doesn't mean they closed their investigation. They're still looking into what's going on over there, and now they're opening up a whole other wing of an investigation here in Seattle, apparently. According to the report, high-profile figures surrounding the UFC are being contacted by the Seattle branch of the FTC, including promoters, fighters, and managers. I think we talked about this last week, how the managers were going to meet before UFC 187 this Saturday for the first time in a long time. So some of those FTC calls might have something to do with that as well. Given the sheer number of inquiries, according to this article, and the line of questioning, many believe that the UFC's business practices are under a full investigation from the agency, whose goals include the protection of consumers and halting of anti-competitive business practices. And, of course, this was back in 2012 when their first problem with the FTC arose. And, you know, they seemed confident at the time they hadn't done anything wrong, but it was right in the wake of the Strikeforce purchase. So, of course, there were some monopoly concerns going on. But ultimately, they really didn't do anything about it. They probably just took some notes, and so if anything gets worse, we'll jump back in again and maybe do something. So, maybe now it's worse. We'll see. And, of course, as we talked about last week, this article points out that this news comes at a particularly bad time for the UFC because they're in the midst of this class action lawsuit with nine of their former fighters, and they're also going through the backlash from current fighters with the Reebok deal. So, pretty crazy stuff. And we had a pretty interesting boxing match over the weekend. Did not see any boxing, any fighting whatsoever this week, except I did watch a little Friday night fights. Kennedy Golovkin, I heard, did his work. Got a 6-round TKO, another stoppage to add to the streak, right?
6th round, and you know there's been so much talk about him that his critics are saying, when's he going to step up and fight someone? Well, then his fans are saying, who wants to fight him? So there's just all this talk. He says he doesn't want to wait on Cotto or Alvarez. He wants one of them now, but I think they're going to fight each other first, and then we'll see what happens. And then there was talk about him moving up with Andre Ward, but Ward hasn't had a fight. How long has it been since Ward's had a fight? 2 years?
Yeah, then he had one coming up.
Yeah, so I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So Triple G's just in a terrible situation. And Mayweather Sr.'s pretty much said that's not going to happen. Forget about that. So that's where we're at.
Well, Tony hung up on us rudely, so.
Yeah, I was wondering if I disconnected or if you guys disconnected me. I think I hit something over my phone by accident.
Oh, I was like, wait a second, we're talking boxing and I don't hear Tony.
Yeah, I heard we were talking about the fighter that checked himself out of the hospital, and then I went to type in to say something, and I think I hit the one button on my phone. I barely know how to use these things. Come on.
Sorry. Well, we're just in it. Gennady Golovkin got another big win, 6-round TKO, and pretty impressive. Looking good.
I didn't get to see some of it. I only got to see some of the clips. You know, he took some shots, but Willie Monroe didn't have the power to, you know, disparage him. And basically, he was feeling that power, and he went down. And he's like, you know, I think I got better things to do.
Yeah, well, you know, Tony, I don't know if you heard, but you know, a lot of the chatter on the forums has been that Triple G's critics, and he has his share of them, and they're saying he's just a blown up. He's been built up against a bunch of stiffs. He won't fight anyone. Well, and then his fans are saying, well, who wants to fight him? I mean, he says he wants Cotto or Alvarez now. He's tired of waiting. He wants to get after it now, but it looks like Alvarez and Cotto are going to fight each other first. So, and then Mayweather Sr. said, forget about that happening. It's just not going to happen. So Triple G's kind of between a rock and a hard place. And a tough situation. And then there's... Mm-hmm. Yeah. So...
I mean, you look at a fighting guy like, you know, Triple G. He still doesn't have the, you know, name recognition yet, like where he's going to bring in the huge multi-million-dollar payday. You know, when, let's look at some of the guys 44, aside from Manny Pacquiao. Pacquiao, that was the big one, you know. So you take a fight, like, his first fight with Marcus Madonna wasn't a huge sell because Marcus Madonna wasn't a household name. And people didn't expect that first fight to be as competitive as it was. The second fight got more interest because the first fight was close. But then you had a fight with Canelo. That was a big deal because Canelo was a rising superstar. Canelo had a heavily Hispanic following, you know, a heavily, heavy Mexican following. So that brought a lot of interest in the Hispanic population. Even Robert Guerrero. Robert Guerrero, you know, not a huge household name, but very popular within the Hispanic community. Almost the same along the lines of Victor Ortiz. Go back to a guy like Shane Mosley. Mosley was a big household name. Past his prime, but he was a household name. Ricky Hatton, you know, was huge in the British community. So those were ones that were going to bring on a lot of interest, even if the fighter wasn't, say, a household name, per se, with, you know, mainstream fans. They had maybe a heavy ethnic following. I don't know that right now, as he's becoming more popular, and he's actually surprisingly becoming popular with the Mexican fans of all things, but I don't think Triple G has that enough of a following to warrant the risk for Mayweather to take.
Yeah, so it's just, he's, like I said, he just seems to be between a rock and a hard place because he's so exciting. In fact, he even said in an interview after the Monroe fight that after the first two rounds, he kind of backed off on purpose and let Monroe hit him. I mean, I'm kind of scratching my head about that. I mean, I don't think that's ever a good plan. Supposedly Monroe didn't have a big punch, but still, you don't want to take chances like that. But he said, I wanted to give the fans some excitement. It was Saturday night. They wanted to come out and have a good time. And I was thinking, oh my God, you know, where's Abel Sanchez at? You know, get this guy back to reality. But I just love his attitude, and I think he could really catch on if something changes here for him. But you're right. I just don't know what it's going to be.
Yep. Not like she's not putting on entertaining shows. Not like she's not giving the fans what they want to see. You know?
Exactly.
It's kind of like the anti-Golovkin. And I'm not, you know, saying this, you know, to disparage anybody else, but take a fighter like, and I remember it because the fight was so bad, I wrote an article about how bad the fight was. And that was, I mean, this fight was so bad, it made Pacquiao Mayweather look like Hagler Hearn, Dottie Ward, and Sophia Corrales all rolled up into one. And that was about 7 or 8 years ago between Jermaine Taylor and Corey Spinks. Corey Spinks is a fighter that's like, you're never going to get, you know, anything, you know, mainstream out of him because the only thing he had was the Spinks thing. But fighting-wise, absolutely not. You know, he could never make a sell out of him because his fight was to the point dreadful. And then when he fought Jermaine Taylor, and for Taylor, this is before he got knocked out by Kelly Pavlik, Taylor had gotten so gun-shy after that first fight with Hopkins, and he got rocked pretty good, that he was cautious against Corey Spinks, who hadn't scored a knockout in like 9 years leading up to that fight.
Yeah.
And it was that's how dreadful the fight was. That would be a fighter that, you know, they have no mainstream popularity and no popularity from the boxing community. You can't sell that fight. A fight with Triple G for Mayweather, I don't think would be financially worth the risk. Because it would sell within the boxing community. You buy it, I buy it, you know. But Joe Schmo in the street that was all in the Pacquiao Mayweather is going to say, who's this Golovkin guy? Oh, he's got a lot of wins, but Mayweather's playing smart, so this place is good too.
Yeah, and I guess if you look at it from Floyd's standpoint, if he can get Kell Brook or Amir Khan, I mean, then you brought up that example of Ricky Hatton, you know, you got the British fans behind him so much. So it's probably the way it's going to be.
A fight with Amir Khan, as bad as it sounds, will sell better than a fight with Golovkin.
How pathetic. I mean, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I can't come up with the scenario where Amir Khan is going to be a live body against Floyd Mayweather. I've been thinking about this and thinking about it, and I'm thinking, how in the world is he going to win that fight? And how are they going to market it? I don't know. I mean, it'll be...
Here's the thing. I mean, and I said this when the fight first got discussed like a year ago, it might have even been before Floyd even fought Madonna. And they were talking about that fight, and I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. See, literally, not even a year or so, or maybe a year or so, after Khan got shellacked by Danny Garcia and got, you know, it had nearly taken off. And I said, you know, this fight would be atrocious. It would be the easiest preview article I ever had to write. Khan's weakness, chin, chin, and chin. And I could say, yeah, the defensive lapses in there, but why be less fun, chin and chin. And I said, I couldn't see that fight going more than 3-4 rounds. Since we caught one of them kind of right hands and left hook, check hook, it's over. You know, Khan doesn't have the chin. And I'm not, and Floyd's got a big puncher here, but Khan has an extremely brittle chin. The only way that fight could even be remotely competitive is if Floyd has a terrible off night and Khan puts up the performance of a lifetime. Because he has speed and he has pretty decent punching power. So he's got boxing ability and he's got quick hands. You can't take that away from him. So if you stay and, you know, maybe take physical shots, maybe move, you know, be a step ahead of him, could it conceivably happen? Of course. Is it likely going to happen? Absolutely not. Is it likely that he's going to get 36 minutes and not get hit with one of them counter punches? Oh, come on. Very doubtful. And once it happens, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
the way it is.
Some big fights coming up this weekend. I do believe, I think the Box Cinco, is that that tournament that this weekend? No, different stuff from Russia this weekend. Or tomorrow night, ESPN Friday Night Fights, looks like some title fights going on. Grigory draws 39-1, 27 knockouts. Speaking of cruiserweights, that cruiserweight there. Fighting Lucas Janik, who's 28-2 with 15 knockouts from Moscow here. This is for the WBC World Cruiserweight title. I didn't know Teddy Atlas had his passport. Alexander Povetkin also on the card. I think Teddy Atlas used to work with Povetkin at one point.
Povetkin, yeah, he did.
28-1 with 20 knockouts. Perez is 21-1 with 13 knockouts. Mike Perez. Is that the same Mike Perez from the Magomedov fight, actually?
Irish Mike Perez, yeah, it would be.
Yeah, so. You know, he's a tough guy. He's fighting here, Povetkin, for the WBC silver heavyweight title. And then we also have another cruiserweight 12-rounder, Rakim Chakiev, 22-1 with 17 knockouts, fighting junior Anthony Wright, who's undefeated, 13-0-1 with 11 knockouts. And this is for the vacant International Boxing Organization World Cruiserweight title. And if that's not enough, we've got a 10-round heavyweight fight and a 10-round cruiserweight fight. All of these could be on TV. I doubt they will be. Alex Lapai, 30-6 with 3 draws and 24 knockouts, versus Manuel Char, 27-3 with 16 knockouts. And the cruiserweight fight, Dmitry Kudryashov, who's 17-0 with all 17 by way of KO. He's fighting Vikapita Mororo, who is 28-4 with 14 knockouts. And then, if all that stuff's not enough, they got a female super lightweight title on the line, the WBA. Svetlana Kulikova, she's 9-0-1 with 1 knockout, fighting Marie Riederer, who is 15-2-1 with 10 knockouts. And the only shitty fight on the card is the first one. The 8-rounder, though, is the lowest they go, 8 rounds here. Dmitry Bivol, he's only 2-0 with 2 knockouts. He's fighting Joey Vegas, who's 17-10. With 2 draws and 10 knockouts. Joey Vegas. We've got to get Joey Vegas on the show. Sounds like he's got a lot of stories. Another one on Friday, ESPN2. I don't know if they're going back and forth here or what, but they both say ESPN2. Is it the same one? Yeah. That's weird. We've got... Andrei Fedosov versus Donovan Dennis, also listed here on ESPN2 tomorrow. Fedosov 27-3, 22 knockouts. Dennis 12-1 with 10 knockouts. And then we've got a lot of titles online. A couple WBA, NABA super welterweight title and the WBO intercontinental super welterweight title between Brandon Adams and John Thompson. Thompson is 16-1 with 5 knockouts. Adams is 17-1 with 12 knockouts. I don't know what's going on there. Between Moscow and California. We're going to have an all-day Friday night fights? I don't know. And actually, Brandon Adams versus John Thompson is also the Boxino final, I should say. I was talking about earlier. So that is this weekend. Also, tomorrow night on Fox Sports, we've got pretty interesting matchups. Ibrahim Lopez at featherweight, undefeated 17-0-1 with 12 knockouts, fighting Alfred Tete, who is 23-3-1 with 20 knockouts. And the main event is another featherweight 10-rounder between Eric Hunter, who is 20-3 with 10 knockouts, and Antonio Escalante. He's 29-7 with 20 knockouts.
Eric Hunter, you know, he's coming back a little bit. He had a down period. Eric the Outlaw Hunter. I had the privilege of covering him one of his fights about 6-7 years ago. And when I got to see him, they were fighting at the Blue Horizon down in Philadelphia, obviously between Blue Clays. And the fight was, you know, between Eric Hunter and, I think the guy's name was Julius and Truman Edmonds, I don't remember. They just had almost identical records. If they were undefeated or they had one loss, I don't remember. But going into the fight, I had only seen Eric like one time, and I had seen Julius two or three times. And despite having, like, identical records, we knew that Eric was the better fighter. And he had a superior amateur pedigree. Julius only had, like, two or three amateur fights. And within one round, it was over. Eric kind of bombed him out. And then he went on it's a bad string. You know, he had a few losses in there. And it was like, why is he losing these fights? And I forget what would happen. I forget if he had managerial issues or he just had sustaining problems. I don't know. But he's come back recently, and he's come back pretty well. You know, he's a very talented fighter that has a good amateur background. So if he is focused and he is on that right path again, watch out for Eric the Outlaw Hunter. I mean, like I said, I just had the privilege of, you know, seeing him up close a few years ago.
Cool. We got Friday night's a busy night again. We got CBS Sports Network. It's also got a card from Nevada. And let's see. At the D Hotel and Casino in Vegas, you had a 12-round lightweight contest at the main event. Vacant IBF Intercontinental lightweight titles on the line between Bahadur Mamajunov, who is 17-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Richard Comey, who is undefeated, 21-0 with 19 knockouts. Another Magomedov is on that card. Middleweight Arif Magomedov, who's 14-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Darnell Boone, who's 21-21, 10 knockouts and 4 draws. What's his name?
Darnell Boone,
the guy that
gave
Corbel a second point. Yeah. Okay, go to page 2. See what else we got going on Saturday. We're into Saturday here, of course. And we got the Vail fight to talk about. Let's see what else. Anything else? What do we have? Nothing there. Gotta go to page 3. Get the good stuff. A pretty interesting heavyweight contest in Scotland. Gary Cornish, 20-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Zoltan Kasala, who's 8-1 with 6 knockouts, for the vacant International Boxing Organization International Heavyweight title.
Wow. Now, the real question is, Yachty Roddy Piper wasn't a referee.
Who knows? I'm sure he can be found for that service these days. Again, it's Arena, Boston, Massachusetts. Here it is, the Premier Boxing Champions latest event, USA on NBC, USA Television, I should say. James DeGale, main event, super middleweight challenger here. He's 20-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Andre Durrell. Also has just one loss, 24 wins, 16 knockouts. So the vacant IBF World Super Middleweight title. So they're living up to their Premier Boxing Champions name, at least. Also on this card, a couple former guests of ours. First of all, Edwin Rodriguez is in the co-main event with Craig Baker. And Baker is undefeated, and Rodriguez is too, if you don't count Andre Ward.
Right.
Not too shabby of a fight here at light heavyweight. Baker's got 16 wins, 12 knockouts. Rodriguez, 26 wins, 17 knockouts, and then one loss to Ward. And we got Gary Spike O'Sullivan. That's middleweight, also on this card. He's 20. He got 20 wins, one loss, with 13 knockouts, fighting Melvin Betancourt. He also has only one loss by knockout, of course. He's 29-1 with 23 knockouts. And Danny O'Connor, he had his original opponent pull out of this fight. 25-2 with 9 knockouts, fighting Chris Gilbert, who's 12-1. I think he was originally supposed to fight Paulie Malignaggi, wasn't he?
Yeah,
so not too surprising there. But Jonathan Guzman, 18-0 with all 18 by knockouts at super bantamweight. Wow, that's pretty good. He is on the card as well, fighting Christian Esquivel, 27-6 with 20 knockout wins of his own, and all 6 of his knockouts, all 6 of his losses were by knockout. And then, of course, as I mentioned, Ryan Kilczewski. Kilczewski, our former guest, he is 22-1, fighting Anthony Napuni, who is 15-14, with 8 knockouts. Kilczewski has 6 knockouts. And we also have super featherweight Logan McGuinness on this card. He's 22-0-1 with 10 knockouts, fighting Gerardo Cuevas, who is 17-13. 15 knockout ones. And that's it. Not a whole lot of boxing going on this weekend.
You know, a lot of times on like a holiday weekend like this, you usually don't get a whole lot.
So, we got UFC 187 to preview, of course. Main event, Anthony Rumble Johnson versus Daniel Cormier, DC.
All right, Rich, what's your gut feeling here?
I got to go with Rumble, I mean.
Yeah, I made that mistake last time, thinking that Gus's mobility would enable him to wear Rumble down, but I don't know. Right now, Rumble, you remember we had a guest about a year ago. I think he was a welterweight boxer, and for the life of me, I can't think of his name. But he made a statement that has stuck with me, and he said, when your body is not at the weight it's supposed to be, that you're just, you're not going to perform. I mean, you know, when I, and that was, I think, Johnson's trouble at 170 and 185. I mean, if we'd ever get him on as a guest, I'd like to ask him, who gave him the idea that he should be fighting at 170? I mean, because the guy doesn't really have any fat at 205. And I think you can take those fights. See, on the countdown, the rap against him, and then from what I've been reading about it, too, the people that are going with Cormier are saying, well, you look at Rumble Johnson. Here's a guy that was knocked out by Vitor Belfort. Here's a guy that was knocked out by Josh Koscheck. But I would say you could take those fights at 170 and 185 and throw them out the window. This is a whole new guy now. And I think mentally he's a different person as well as physically. And right now I think Cormier is going to have a very difficult time getting out of the first or second round, because at some point, you know, like Cormier even said in the countdown, that the key is you can't get lazy against him, but at some point, he's going to, you know, Rumble's going to land something. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not betting against Rumble on this one.
Yeah, I like him to win this one by knockout within the first 3 rounds, I'd say. And I think Cormier will kind of fight this the same way he did with Jon Jones, except I think he will be a little bit sharper. He'll probably defend the knees a little bit better, knowing that's what hurt him the last time. And he's going to try to accentuate his wrestling a little more. He might be a little bit quicker, but not quick enough.
Well, you know what? What they were saying on the countdown, they're part of the hype for Cormier is that Cain Velasquez was hurt so bad that he wasn't able to train with Cain for the fight with John Jones. But then I would counter that by saying John Jones wasn't able to train with Cain either. So, and supposedly now Cormier's been training with Cain, and that's supposed to make him a whole new fighter. Well, I'm not saying it's not helping him. I mean, when you train with the baddest man on the planet, it has to help you. But
you realize
still
how
think
funny that joke you just made was?
The what?
That joke you just made was pretty funny. You didn't even realize you made it. It was so funny.
Yeah.
John Jones wasn't training with Kane? Yeah, he was. Cocaine.
Oh, wrong kind of cane. Okay, things go better with coke. Yeah, there you go. Okay, but I mean, I just don't see how that's going to elevate Cormier to the point where he's going to be able to avoid Rumble for 15 minutes. Now, if he gets into the fourth or fifth round, I think that the momentum will shift to Cormier, but again, though, I'm sure that Rumble's been training awful hard, and I was going back and reading some Cus D'Amato talk about fighters getting tired. And D'Amato had a very different slant on that than you'll read anywhere else. I mean, I could read that guy forever. And like he said, that the main reason that guys get tired in a fight is they're looking for a way out, that things aren't going their way. A lot of it's mental, because if you've done the training and things are going good, you should not be getting tired. So,
right.
Be interesting to see. I mean, I know Cormier's stamina is off the charts, but I would think Rumble might be able to match him. But, yeah, I'd say if it does go the distance, maybe look for Cormier, but I don't see it going the distance. You heard it here. You heard it here first.
Thankfully, this is one of those cards where we have two title fights and not one of them was canceled. Chris Weidman versus Vitor Belfort, finally going to happen. Weidman coming in 12-0, Belfort 24-10. No TRT this time for Belfort, so I don't think that's affected him as much as some people thought it might. And he says it's made him feel better than ever, so who knows? Maybe he's replaced it with something else or really doing things the right way. We don't know about it. Weidman is a tough competition. He's been through his own tough battles, too. I mean, the Machida fight was really tough for him. And, he's had a good camp.
It still comes down to this. When has betting against Weidman ever been such a good idea?
Exactly.
I mean, I know there's a first time for everything, and I think early on, I think Weidman's got to be careful in that first round, second round, because Vitor is extremely explosive. I remember when he first came along back in, back in 97, I believe it was January 97, May of 97, I think he first came along. But, his hands were just, he had pro boxing hands back then. He was just ridiculously explosive. But I think Weidman's planned for that, and I think that he'll shut him down, and then the longer it goes, the worse for Vitor. But he's a live body, though, for sure. It's going to be interesting.
Well, just to play devil's advocate, I think I'm going to go with Vitor. Because of his experience, I think he's got this one. He's been waiting a long time for this fight. Weidman, I like him. I know he's got a good style. He was able to beat Anderson Silva, but I think Anderson Silva was one of those guys that was a little overrated. He was ready. He wasn't really in the right frame of mind when he went into that fight. He was kind of ready to lose. He was burdened by being the champion. So, kind of helped Weidman get to his level of fame and superstardom. And he got the belt, obviously. But, he had that fight against Machida that really showed a lot of his weaknesses. And I think somebody like Belfort can capitalize on that. So I'm going to
I think you can make a good case for that because, what's another one of those old fight game cliches, there's only one undefeated fighter, and that's Father Time. No one has beat Father Time yet. And maybe it was a combination of Anderson getting older and plus being just so ridiculously overconfident. And when you think about it, it's almost like how could he not be, considering the role that he'd been on since going back to 2005 or 2006. I believe he came to the UFC in 2005 and won the title in 2006 against Rich Franklin. And he'd been pretty much untouchable with the exception of that Sonnen fight. But even there, he came back and won it. So it's like I wouldn't blame him for being overconfident. Maybe those factors caught up. And when it comes to Machida, not only I think a lot of people figured out his style, but you remember Machida's been around forever. I mean, he goes back to the 90s. So
right. And we also have Donald Cerrone versus John McDessie. Cerrone is 27-6. McDessie is 13-3. And Cowboy just came out with some big complaints, actually, on the Reebok front. Said he's going to lose $60,000 a fight over that. And, you know, obviously we had Dana White blast Brendan Schaub over his complaints. But when it comes to guys like Donald Cerrone and even Miles Jury, when he threw his stuff in the trash, Dana is actually not really upset with those guys, not really blasting those guys because they're kind of at the top of their game. Because it really shows you the double standards going on there. I mean, not that he's going to punish Schaub and not punish the other ones, but you know, when a guy like Dana White gets out there and makes fun of you in the media, it can't be good for you.
Oh, and then another one of our former guests talked about how much money she would lose per fight. Cupcake.
Oh,
yeah, she came on. And she really thinks this is a terrible deal. So this is really, you know, it's coming up pretty quick now. It's going to be reality in July, and I'm convinced the UFC is committed where they're at and what they're doing. They're not going to switch gears. So this will be interesting to see how it shakes out.
All right. And as for this fight, Cerrone versus McDessie, this is a situation where it's literally McDessie has half the experience here as Cerrone, so might not look good on paper, but McDessie's pretty talented. I mean, that's an excellent ratio.
Yeah, and again, congratulate him for stepping up on short notice. You've got to appreciate that. This is not going to be an easy assignment for him. Maybe he figures, well, there's not a whole lot to lose. I mean, if he does get blasted, he could say, hey, I am taking it on short notice. But, yeah, I got to go with Cowboy, but I'm looking forward to a competitive fight, though.
And we're really going to find out whether Travis Brown read my article about defense that I featured him in prominently. He's going to be fighting Andre Arlovsky, who's pretty well known for his striking. More importantly, his right hand actually wobbled Fedor once, so pretty tough guy.
Well, all I can say, again, Arlovsky is fairly shopworn. He's been around a long, long time. Had a great career, but I just think his time has passed. This is Travis Brown's fight to lose, and if he does lose, well, that'll tell us a lot about him.
I just want to see him keep his fucking hands up.
Well, when you weigh 265 pounds, those arms must be pretty heavy, you know.
Yes, so. He's 17-2-1 coming into this one, and you know, he bounced back after that loss that I dragged him across the coals for not keeping his hands up. But I think he did improve slightly, but still, it just needs a lot of work. I can't understand how anybody in his camp wouldn't correct that immediately. And they saw that, especially in that fight, how bad it was. Anyway, we also have Joseph Benavidez on this card. He's 21-4, fighting John Moraga. He's 16-3. We got John Dodson, who's 16-6, fighting Zach Makovsky, who's 19-5.
That may be one of the highlights of the evening. I have a good feeling about that fight.
Yeah, I like watching Dodson. Myself.
Yeah, I mean, Dodson's one of the little guys. That, I mean, he brings it. You know, he doesn't take
a
step backwards.
If Meldrick Taylor was in MMA, that's how he would fight.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can agree with that. And Zach also is a pretty tough guy. So this ought to be a very entertaining fight.
And we got another Korean guy. Well, the only Korean guy, I guess, Jung Hyun Kim, right? He's 19-3-1, fighting Josh Berkman, who's 27-10. And That's not enough. We've got a whole bunch of other ones on the preliminaries here. Uriah Hall, 10-4 versus Rafael Natal, who's 19-6-1. It's a big step up for Hall. See how he handles that one. And we've got Rose Namajunas from the Ultimate Fighter episode there with Ronda. That season, she's Namajunas is 2-2. Nina Ansarov is 6-4. Mike Pyle versus Colby Covington. Pyle is 26-10-1. Covington is undefeated 7-0. And first two fights, we got Leo Kuntz, who is 17-1-1, versus Islam Makhachev, who is 11-0. It's pretty damn good records there, combined 28-1-1 on the second fight of the night. Pretty good. First fight of the night, Justin Scoggins, 9-2, versus Josh Sampo, 11-4. So a pretty good card all around. It's probably going to be worth the money if you pay for it, which I don't. We'll see. And we got one FC, actually, one championship, they call it now. Warriors Quest, number 27. Their 27th event here, also this weekend. Overseas. I'll get to that one. That loads up, I guess. Come on, Sure Dog. White also, Dana White also came out this week, I think actually yesterday or the day before, and said that he thinks Ronda Rousey versus Cyborg would do, I think, 2 million pay-per-view buys. He's guaranteed. Guaranteed that. 2 million.
Well, yeah, I remember taking a look at that, and that's encouraging because that means that the fight might happen. I mean, that's the most optimistic thing. I feel better about its chances now than I have in the past because I just felt before that they're going to protect Ronda, and it's just going to go on, and she's going to keep fighting stiffs, and now this may really happen.
Well, if you really want to find out when that fight's going to happen, all you got to do is talk to Cyborg Surgeon because you got to find out when she's going to have her right leg removed.
We'll see how she does because from what I understand, she's going to have a fight at 135. Now I think she's got one more at 145. Then she's going to try to come down to 135. So we'll see how she does.
And that one FC one championship fight, I got up. Got the card up here now. Main event is Shinya Aoki, former UFC guy. He's 37-6, fighting Koji Ando, who is 11-3-2. And also on this card, I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. I'm not going to try because it's so long. He's 4-0, fighting Roy Dalíguez, who is 6-1. And we've got Marat Gafarov, who's 10-0, fighting Ev King, who's 9-2. Lowen Tynanes, who's 6-0, fighting Kuat Kamatov, who's 18-3-1. Eddie Ng, who's 7-2, fighting Ariel Sexton, who's 9-3. Haile Alatang, who's 3-3, fighting Stephen Langdown, who's 2-1. And yes, you heard it right. Amir Khan is on this card. Amir Khan is 3-1. Fighting Sharon Wirachai. Shannon Wirachai, who is 3-1. And we've got Benedict Ang, 0-0, debut, versus Waqar Umar, who's 3-2. Ayad Syed Saber, 3-5, versus Angela Lee, who's making her debut. And we've got first fight of the night, Jian Bing Yang, who's 3-0, fighting Ali Yakub, who's 0-1. But you didn't know Amir Khan was fighting this weekend. In MMA, Amir Khan. He's a busy dude. And actually, I read something, too, this week. I didn't go to the whole article because I just kind of laughed at it. But apparently, Ronda Rousey said that she would fight Floyd Mayweather if they were dating. So I don't know how that came out. I don't know how that came out at all, but I thought that was kind of wacky. We had a Bellator event over the weekend, in addition to that UFC fight that I didn't see. I did actually watch this one, Kendall Grove versus Brandon Halsey in the main event. And win or lose, Brandon Halsey was going to lose the title because he didn't make weight. And put on a hell of a show, unfortunately. Would have kept the title if he did make weight, but now I guess he's going to have to fight for it again.
Now, am I imagining this, or does this seem to be happening with a very discouraging frequency, this missed weight stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you have to consider too.
And the question is, why? What's the deal, I wonder?
I guess guys are just getting too comfortable with, you know, the idea that they can lose a lot of weight really quickly. And what you're seeing is people like Rumble Johnson, you know, who's probably better at a naturally higher weight, but he's cutting all this weight because he knows he's done it before. And as his body grows a little bit and gets more muscular from all this training, it's harder and harder every camp to lose that weight when it comes down to crunch time. So I think that's what happened to a guy like this, Halsey. And he's 8-0, coming in undefeated. So, you know, he knows he's that good at this weight class in particular. You know, he's obviously getting more muscular, muscle weighs more than fat. It's tougher to lose that weight. And, you know, he's only 3 pounds over. I've lost a pound and a half in 15 minutes in wrestling. You know, it's just going into the showers and putting on 6 layers of clothing and a jacket, putting the hot water on and just taking a steam bath in the shower there, running in place. You know, it doesn't take much effort to lose a pound and a half when you've had the energy to do it. But, you know, this has to be a case of, oh, I don't even have the energy to cut weight right now. You know, it's a miracle I got here. So, yeah, I mean, especially when you're coming in with a team, it doesn't make a lot of sense unless there's no possible way he could get down to that weight. Or they really totally miscalculated. They were using the wrong scale or something. They're using the metric system. He was 21 stone. No. 185 pounds. So he came in at 188.1. Not good. So he actually had to forfeit 20% of his purse to Grove. Half to the California State Athletic Commission and half to Grove. Now, Grove actually looked all right in the very beginning, but then he just kind of got the accumulated punishment just took over in that one. And some other guys missed weight too. Mike Richmond and Eduardo Dantas. Richmond was over 3.2 pounds, over his 136 pound welterweight max. Not too good. That was a good fight too.
Well, maybe they can blame it on the food additives. You know, I'm reading more about that. All this stuff that in the processed food, they're putting all this stuff in that makes people gain weight. And I'm waiting to hear that one. That'll be pretty good.
Well, yeah, I think I talked about it on the show before. Orlando Salido used that excuse before when he tested positive after his fight with Robert Guerrero. He said the beef he was eating, that's where the testosterone came from. hormones, given the cow's hormones, so they transferred to a steak he was eating, and he ate the steak, and that's why he tested positive.
Well, you know, the sad thing is there may have been something to it, but I question if it would be that big of an amount.
Well, you know, Brock Lesnar's dad was a dairy farmer. Who knows? He's a pretty big dude. What happened to him? I actually knew a guy in high school who his father was like a scientist. And biggest kid I've ever seen, muscular-wise. He was into bodybuilding and all that shit. And I swear, this kid was like literally his father's science experiment. So, I don't know what the hell this guy was given growing up, but certainly paid off. Anyway, it's really all the news I've got to cover. I don't really have any